Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
Hello, Peter. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Ben. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is for me, too.
Are you excited?
Yeah, sorry. I thought you were going to say for something,
no.
But...
No.
Yes, I'm excited. I really am.
Just excited. I have No other qualifiers or really anything to be excited about. I just,
nothing specific.
You're excited for the podcast.
Just generally excited, yeah.
That's good. That's good. We both sound excited.
We do. Yeah. Especially those long pauses of excitement. Those
yeah,
are really
I really
good.
Wanted to let that one hang and just see how long...
Before one of us
we
says
could,
something.
Yeah, we could get away with it, really. Yes, welcome. This is a video game podcast. We talk about video games here. I don't know if you knew that. Also, every single week we have an ad, an actual advert to lead in and close out the show. Different advertiser every time. For some reason, we can't hold them down, but they are always real. And I don't know why you would... I don't know why you'd even say that they weren't. So Peter's got the ad read in front of him for this week.
I have. It's right here. Hey... Do you like video games?
Yeah.
Right. I think some of the people listening to this podcast probably like video games as well, because it is a video game podcast. Mm. But do you know what people who like video games also enjoy?
Chips.
Chips. And chips is the one of the things, and the one other thing that they also enjoy, there's only two things, is making their own honey at home.
Oh.
So introducing... The brand new next generation technology coming out of Sony at the moment. It's the Sony PlayStation Hive. You too can get a whole bunch of bees inside your Sony PlayStation Hive. And before you know it, you'll have fresh honey every morning.
Wow.
Every morning. It's like chickens laying eggs. The bees just lay a little bit of enough honey for some toast or for your granola.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's delicious. It's a weird sort of move from Sony because, of course, until now, they've been far more interested in the Sony PlayStation Door, which is the thing that allows you to get into your kitchen in the morning. But then they realised, well, now that people can get into their kitchens, what are they going to do? What are they going to have for their breakfasts? So that PlayStation Hive is ready for you right now.
Yeah, well, lest we forget the PlayStation Chive as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also coming out. So plenty of options. Does it come with the bees?
Oh, God. There's bees blowing up my phones. Hang on, let me mute that sucker.
Oh, beep, my goodness. Beep.
Okay, there we go.
Wow. Right. I was going to say, do the bees come with the console or is that extra? Is there BLC? Like, do you buy them? Can you buy like special bees?
Downloadable content. There certainly is. Yes, you can buy lots of different kinds of bees. Bees that like make different flavored honey. Bees that make chutney. Bees that make proper chip shop vinegar, not like the stuff that's not chip shop vinegar that you can get in the shops,
right.
The supermarkets. Anything you like, any condiment or anything that comes in a jar or a bottle, there are special downloadable bees for you to get.
Do they make mistakes?
No, No, they don't. They never make mistakes, but they do occasionally make... make things up like this advert.
No. Oh, come off it. I thought that was this was the time.
Yeah, you thought this was the
it's gonna be true. Yeah. Mm. Wow. Well,
I'm sorry. I was hesitating as to whether to crush your dreams, but
too late. It's done. Dreams crushed. No, apparently that's not real. As much as we would all love it to be true, it's not. Sadly, the real sponsors of this show are not the what was it? The BS Hive.
Yeah, the PlayStation Hive.
And I shouldn't have even said sadly as a qualifier. I'm just sad about the bees. What I am happy about is that the real sponsors of this show are our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/team-triple-jump, where for as little as $1 per month, you can access the weekly post where we ask you for questions for this show, because you guys are the people who get the questions on the podcast that we answer. Also, we need and love your support over on Patreon. It does help immeasurably. We have different tiers available. It's a very direct way of supporting us financially, because, you know, stupid things happen all the time when you work in the volatile and ever-changing landscape of YouTube and online media. True. as we discovered this week when our video about censored video games was itself censored by YouTube, so we couldn't make any money off it. Video's still live, but they've just decided to turn adverts off because apparently we violated stuff by talking about the things that got video games censored in
nipples
countries around
and
the world.
Stuff.
Yeah, we just talked about nipples, and apparently we fell into some category where nipples discounted us. Areolas discounted us.
Don't talk about them unless they're male nipples. You can talk about male nipples if you like.
Male nipples are fine, but apparently, yeah, confirmed by manual review. Someone at YouTube watched that video and said, no, don't you talk about nipples. And so we're not going to make any money off that video. And, you know, those videos don't just, you know, come out of nowhere. Mm. They take a great deal of effort from several people. So if you can support us, patreon.com/team-triple-jump goes a really long way, and we really, really appreciate it.
We do, absolutely. Ben, where are we walking today?
B.
Just at Abbey.
Just
A-B.
Abbey.
Okay, excellent. Well, we can jump straight into questions then from those very supportive patrons that you just mentioned. This is from Robert James, two first names. If you could port or remaster a PS2 or PS3 game to PS5, which game would benefit the most? What features would you add? Would it be Beverly Hills Cop?
I'm in trouble, Tubbs.
Ben, what would you do?
I would... Because I've spoken about it before several times. PS3 is my favorite console. And because it's such a nightmare console in that developing for it was hard... And porting games off it apparently is hard and time-consuming as well. There's a lot of amazing exclusive games on PS3 that nobody will ever be able to experience again unless they get a copy and also get a PS3. I know there's PlayStation Now, but PlayStation Now is crap and there aren't that many games on there.
No.
So it's unlikely that you'd be able to experience the full range of amazing exclusive titles that were on the PS3. So for that reason... I would quite like a remaster of at least the first Resistance game. If we could get the whole trilogy, that would be amazing. The second one wasn't such a big fan of, but the third one was incredible. 1 and 3 had co-op campaigns. You could play two-player local split-screen co-op, and I think the third one was actually online co-op as well for the campaign. They all had decent multiplayer suites as well versus competitive multiplayer. They were really good fun.
Right.
And this was before, I know this wasn't a complete novelty at the time, but this was before Call of Duty 4 came out and sort of revolutionized and changed online competitive first-person shooters. But, you know, you had all the ranks and stuff and you were leveling up. And it was super fun, the first game. In fact, I think I would actually prefer a remake of it. Because I know that it's quite dated by today's standards. But even so, I think the fact that trilogy is marooned on PS3 is a real shame. And I think more people should play it, and it should be made more readily available. And I just don't understand why that series, Infamous, there's others that my brain is leaking sort of vital thinking juice this morning, and I'm not really all here today. But there's loads of games on PS3 that are just stranded there, and I'm shocked. I'm shocked that Sony didn't port them in some sort of collection to PS4, but there we are.
Yeah. I guess in sort of a similar way, I mean, it's less trapped, but I would probably like to port, or no, again, probably remake Time Splitters Future Perfect. I think for a couple of reasons, really. I think doing a remake slash remaster of a game like that, you know, that's one way for a start to encourage a sequel or a reboot, or you know, a continuation of the series, because THQ Nordic will do nothing unless they maybe think, oh, there's money to be made with this license.
Yeah.
So, number one, you know, like if people like the Future Perfect remake slash remaster, it might sort of encourage more beyond that. Also, I think it works perfectly well in and of itself as an entry point to the series. So, you know, with some games, or some series, I should say, I would, if I wanted people to sort of get into them, people who haven't played them before, you know, you are kind of, in a lot of cases, the best advice really is to, okay, well, play the first one and play your way through, and then you'll understand it all and da-da-da. But with Future Perfect, you know, I think that the previous two games didn't have the most enthralling or deep stories in the world, did they? So I think with Future Perfect, all you really need to learn sort of before the opening cutscene is about like Corporal Hart, and even then you don't really need to know about her, and and yeah, this guy has got some time crystals that he needs to get back home to save the world, and then from there I don't think there's really any callbacks that you need to know about to previous games in terms of narrative. Obviously there's characters that come back and things like that, but you don't need to know that, so it's a good entry point as well. I mean, it doesn't even have three in the name. Like, I call it, I sometimes just say Time Splitters 3, but it's just Time Splitters : Future Perfect. So
yeah, we used to just call it Future Perfect among our friends. Yeah.
And in terms of, like, adding features, I don't know, I'd guess, I think technically it had, like, network play on the PS2, but, you know, I would add proper multiplayer system, online multiplayer with lobbies and stuff. Maybe more characters, possibly.
More characters.
Yeah, amazing. I think that's one of its biggest selling points, is how many ludicrous characters there are, and I would just want them to go absolutely bonkers with it.
Yeah.
Maybe THQ Nordic could just put like loads of characters from their own, from all the IPs that they own.
Yeah, SpongeBob.
Yeah, exactly.
The Destroy All Humans alien.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
Maybe the sort of resoundingly successful protagonist of Haze, you know. The game
Haze.
That sunk Free Radical Design and prevented us from getting Time Splitters 4. Haze, yeah.
John Haze.
Jonathan Haze. Honestly, they were all 2008, that they all had those names.
Yeah.
It was like Cal Haze. John Strongjaw.
Yeah.
Bill Punchfist.
Yeah.
Jeremy
Max Flux.
Yes. Jeremy Gunhands.
Yeah. Also, I would like improve on the map builder, because that game had a great,
didn't you?
Had a great map builder. I used to use it all the time, and you know, the idea of like building even more with it is super cool. Like, bless you. You can only do indoor environments, as far as I remember. It was all like rooms with walls and ramps and doors and things. But it was still pretty versatile in its day. So I would, you know, go mad with it. I'd love to play that game again in a remade form, not only remastered but remade with new features and stuff. I think it'd be great.
Let's be Francis about it, Peter.
Yeah,
THQ Nordic have got to know that this is the one that people want, right?
You'd think so, because when they acquired it, there were headlines about it on gaming, you know, news outlets saying, oh my god, so it's been bought by a new company, it's THQ Nordic this time, maybe we'll finally get either, you know, re-releases or a sequel. How exciting. And then it never happened.
Yeah. They've done some strange remakes so far. And a strange remaster in Kingdoms of Amalur. Not that the original game wasn't good. Mm. It's just it wasn't a very inventive or interesting remaster at all. It was just, here's the original game, bugs and all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. But given that they've frequently said that they have 20 billion games in development across their thousands of studios currently, you've got to imagine that the reason we've had such strange remasters slash remakes so far is sort of a... Just, again, it goes back to how many games they've got in development in that they can afford to do that because they're also remaking slash remastering really good and interesting games as well. Final Fantasy, not Final Fantasy, Jesus Christ, including Future Perfect and the other Time Splitters games. You've got to think so, right? They're making so many, and they've so far released such strange things that you've got to think, well, at least some of these hundreds of games that are in development have got to be something that I'm interested in, right?
Yeah, surely no one has gone down the list of IP and gone, right, what should we remake? We've got Time Splitters. Oh, SpongeBob. Oh, Kingdoms of Amalur. SpongeBob. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's time for Haze 2, man. Yeah. We've been waiting. We're ready for it.
We've got the original voice actor of Jonathan Hayes. He's not had no work since Haze 1.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he has. That might be a really weird
thing.
Maybe it was Nolan North, everyone.
It was
Troy Baker.
Definitely Nolan North. Let's see. Hayes game. Let's find out who this guy was. Right. So you think he's called John Hayes, right?
John Hayes, yeah.
Let's see what he's called. Or close. It's one of those names. It's Shane Carpenter.
Right, yeah.
That's one of them, right?
He's a carpenter, so he can chisel his jaw, I think.
Hayes Shane Carpenter voice. Let's see. Here we go. Bertie Carvel.
Right.
Who's Bertie Carvel?
He's got the least 2008 action hero name I've ever heard. He's called Bertie.
So he plays Imperial Agent, in parentheses, male, in Star Wars The Old Republic.
Right.
He played Shane Carpenter in Hayes. And in Revolting Rhymes, a 2016 TV show, he played Mirror, Huntsman, Senior Dwarf, and Prince.
2016?
Yeah.
They did Revolting Rhymes in like the 80s or 90s with Rick Mayall, but I didn't know they'd done it again. Roald Dahl.
Might be a remake.
There you go. He's already doing remakes. He could just come back and play John Carpenter Jaw. John Carpenter. He can come back and play John Carpenter.
Carpenter's the thing.
Yeah.
Incredible. Brilliant. Okay, yeah, there we go. Spoiler for the end of Hayes. Apparently, according to the wiki, he is alive. So, there we go. Yeah.
So they could do a sequel.
Hayes 2. Mm. Get ready.
Perfect.
Hayes harder.
Well, from games that we're very much not playing, it's time to move on to a section where we talk about games that we are playing.
Yes.
It's called What We Are Playing.
Peter, what are you playing?
I have been playing almost exclusively the Crash Bandicoot 4 still, because there is so much to collect in that game. And I did warn one and all a couple of weeks ago that this may well be the game that I talk about for the next couple of months on what we're playing. I don't know. Yeah. I think eventually I'll get all the easy ones and I'll be like, okay, do I really care about getting the rest? Am I actually going to try and complete this game entirely? So we'll see how that goes. But I have, as of yesterday at time of recording, collected and completed all of the flashback tapes, which was super fun. Those are the, they're like VHS tapes that were recorded by Neocortex in the late 90s of Crash being trained before he escaped. Well, spoiler alert, and I guess this is actually a little bit of a spoiler, so don't listen for 15 seconds. Crash escapes halfway through the flashback tapes, and then the other ones are Coco. So Coco was like left in the tower, or created in the tower after Crash's escape. So that's kind of interesting. And then that ends in the same way. So that's super fun. And there's all kind of, I've said as well, I think, on maybe on the Quipscope, that there's all kinds of fun callbacks and stuff. Like you hear Cortex talking about plans that he's got with Crash and what he's going to do. And things like you get the origin of like where Crash and Coco's outfits came from, what Cortex thinks about Wumpa Fruit. And there's like little Easter eggs. So like in the last flashback tape, Cortex was kind of moaning about how much trouble has been caused by these bandicoots that he's been working on. And he said, maybe next time I'll try a hedgehog or a gecko or maybe a bobcat, which is Bubsy, of course.
Which is Bubsy, yeah.
So that was fun. And there's a similar line in one of the final levels of the main game where he says he's again complaining that he shouldn't have bothered with the bandicoot, and he said, "If only I'd stuck with the wombat, things could have been different." And which is that's a reference to the development of Crash Bandicoot itself. Originally, he was going to be Willy Wombat, and then
that would be amazing.
He became Crash Bandicoot, so that's like a little kind of in-universe reference to the fact that Crash was nearly a wombat, but then he wasn't. So
Willy Wombat.
The whole game is filled with little nods like that, and there's things in the background, like you see Ripperoo bouncing across rooftops, and there's a portrait of Tiny Tiger in one of the areas, and it's super fun. It's a real love letter to the original trilogy, which, you know, that's obviously how people describe the Insane trilogy, in that was, you know, completely recreating the trilogy itself. But even now, moving on to a sequel, they're still writing love letters, as it were, to the to the old games, which is really nice.
That is nice.
Yeah. Something else I will have played by the time this podcast comes out is Two Point Hospital and the new DLC that's just come out. At the time of recording, I have not played it. I'll be doing so today. But that's very exciting. We should have a Quipscope available on the channel all about that. But yeah, it looks very exciting. The new DLC is called Culture Shock. Yeah. It looks super fun, and I'm looking forward to giving it a go. And you can hear all my thoughts on the Quipscope on the channel.
Absolutely. You've not had a chance to play Two Point Hospital yet, have you?
I've not. I've actually got it on my PS4, and I've just never got round to playing it.
Nice. I imagine PC will be a superior experience from a control perspective.
I suspect so, because it's a PC version we've been kindly given. So, very exciting stuff. Yeah.
Wonderful.
What about you? What have you been playing?
Well, once again, I thought this week it was going to be another, I can't really get into anything. I'm not really enjoying any games sort of week. But now that I've amassed my list of games played, I've once again been all over this week.
Yeah.
So very quickly, after the video game TV show documentary, I think it was High Score that I recommended last time, I've just finished watching Rob McElhaney's Without Further Ado,
right?
Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet, which was the thing from E3 a couple of years ago.
Of
Ubisoft.
Course. Yeah,
I had no idea that fell off the face of the earth for me. And even though we frequently take the piss with our Without Further Ado, Without Further Ado, Without Further Ado, because he got it wrong at E3, I forgot that it was a game. It was a sitcom based in a game studio, which sounds amazing.
Yeah, I don't always remember that's the reference. Like, I just remember that lots people
get
of people
it wrong.
Say,
yes,
yeah, not
absolutely.
Necessarily just him, but yeah.
But yeah, it aired the beginning of this year, and they also did a quarantine episode, and I've just finished watching the first season. The second season has been, I think, renewed already. It was really good. It was really good. If you get a chance to watch it, I think it was an Apple original. God knows, how and where you can find that. I assure you, I watched it through perfectly above board means.
On Apple.com.
On Apple.com/the television bit dot Yes. And it was surprisingly good. It was a little cheesy in places. Obviously, it's dumbing down the intricacies of game development for the purpose of appealing to a lot of people who might not know about games. And there's a couple of bits which, you know, I wasn't upset by at all, but just given sort of the current issues faced with the games industry, it was quite sort of like, oh, okay, where two testers stay up all night to log some bugs and they're like wheeling around on office chairs and eating ice cream sandwiches and like doodling all over the place. And then at the end they go, wow, that was some crazy crunch, huh? And it was like, oh no, okay. But then
people are off with depression.
Yeah, I think it's a little more serious than that in some cases.
Well, yeah.
But no, I'm not talking. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying.
In
terms
you're right.
Of how the show portrayed it is sort of like, whoa, crazy crunch, my dude.
Yeah.
But then they do actually take it a bit more seriously later on in the series. I really liked it. It's reviewed pretty well, also. And there was a very touching episode in it too. So I would, and also kudos to them for being one of the only quarantine special episodes I've seen of a show. You know, because lots of shows came back to just do a show where everyone was on Zoom or whatever.
Yeah.
Where they actually explored the mental health aspect of people feeling overwhelmed by left alone, you know, and not seeing anyone with nothing to distract them. I've not seen any shows do that, so I thought that was really cool. So yeah, that's Mythic Quest: Raven's Banquet. It's rude and adult, but I would recommend giving it a watch. I just
Excellent.
Finished watching it last night. Anyway, very quickly, what I played: a little bit of Dark Souls. Barbara was called for to help out a friend,
right?
And it was New Game Plus, and Barbara was not ready for New Game Plus, so Barbara had a tough time. I also started a new game in Pokemon Blue. I was just looking at my vast Game Boy collection, and I wanted something to do, so I grabbed a Game Boy and a copy of Pokemon Blue out of the display cabinet, and I started playing that. Got the first gym badge. I'm playing it in sort of my old school. What's the term I'm looking for? My old school approach to playing Pokemon games, which is screw having any other Pokemon, just have your starter and make them kill everything so they're a ridiculous level and nobody can stop them. So that's how I'm playing it, because I think it's the fastest way to get through the game.
Right.
Call of Duty Warzone, I keep dipping into. It's increasingly, as people might be able to tell by now, it's increasingly becoming just an avenue for me to catch up with and hang out with friends and old friends and just chat and just play a game for an evening because everyone's got it. And they've got a Halloween update, which is really cool.
Nice.
It sets the map to nighttime. I haven't played it yet. It releases loads of spooky ghoulies and zombies and stuff into the playing field and so on, and it looks like an interesting twist. So looking forward to playing more of that. The True is a game that you'll no doubt enjoy, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those really good My First Unity games.
Oh yeah,
sort of flooded
I saw you talking
store.
About this. Yeah,
I got it because the trailer looked appalling, and there are areolas in that game. I'll tell you that much. Yeah, so we can't talk about it too much, or we'll get demonetized. But it was appalling. I followed a trophy guide to get the platinum, and it was so broken and janky, and oh, it was everything you would expect and more. Really, really, really bad, with just the funniest animations I think I've ever seen in a game. And finally, Mass Effect Andromeda.
Oh yeah, you still on that?
Played some more last night. I played a little bit after I talked about it on the podcast last week, and I pretty much immediately encountered a bug that sent me back to the main menu, and then it wouldn't recognize any controller inputs, so I stopped there. I've now played a little bit more. I've got my ship. I've gone to the first planet and completed the main quest there, and then I spent the last portion of last night running around and talking to all of my crew. There's, outside of what's been said about Andromeda to death, about the jankiness and the bugs, I haven't encountered any real bugs yet, apart from the one that sent me back to the main menu. I got a lot of tweets from people saying that they didn't have any issues, which is totally fair, but I think it's pretty telling that I encountered one immediately.
Yeah.
It's just very janky. Facial animations are still really weird and unnatural. The way they run is strange. Nobody moves like a person, and the voice acting is all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't have the Mass Effect magic. I think it's competent enough, but it's definitely not up to the standards that people were expecting. And I obviously, you know, coming into this 3 years later, I wasn't expecting much. But I'm going to keep playing it and see how I get on until something else comes out that distracts me. Yeah, I'm glad I've gotten over the first initial hurdle of, wow, this is Mass Effect Andromeda, huh?
Yeah.
And now I'm actually sort of getting into the meat of it. You know, the combat's fun, and I like that. So I'm going to stick with it for now, and we'll see how we get on.
Well, I'm glad you got over the first hurdle of, like, it locking up on you and that you were willing to continue, and now you're, you know, having enough fun with it. Because, you know, that's the kind of thing where if you go into a game already knowing that, oh, this is supposed to be bad and buggy, but I'm going to give it a chance, mm-hmm. and then within half an hour, you're suddenly, like, soft-locked. It's like, oh, okay. Well, yeah. or hard locked, I guess, in this case, that can be enough to make you just go, right, okay, I guess it's as bad as it's supposed to be. I'm not going to play it anymore. But you got through it. Excellent news.
I'm going to keep playing. I heard people on Twitter loud and clear. There was a big response. A lot of people saying, why on earth are you playing that?
Yeah.
And a lot of people saying, I really liked it, actually. It wasn't as bad as everyone says. It's a perfectly fine Mass Effect game. Obviously, Mass Effect, I don't associate with perfectly fine. I'm a huge Mass Effect 2 fan, and I was immediately hooked and cared about that game and universe and all the characters, despite not playing Mass Effect 1, because it wasn't on PS3 at the time. This, though, don't really feel an affinity for anyone at
right.
all. So there's already a big sort of dissonance there for me, but I'm going to keep playing and I'll see how I get on.
Okay, yeah, good. Well, we'll all see how you get on.
I suppose we will, won't we?
In the next What We Playing. That was What We Playing. It's time for question two, though.
This is from Jonesy. Hello, chaps. You've been contacted by a new video games convention. What's it called, Peter?
VidGamCon.
Hmm. Yeah. Very good. That is offering a chance for those in journalism/media to come along and interview anyone they would like from the world of gaming. Producers, writers, voice actors, artists, designers, everyone is there. Must be a pretty big aircraft hangar, it says. Who would you choose to interview and what would be your line of questioning for them? As ever, keep up the great work, guys. Take care, Jonesy.
Oh, thanks, Jonesy. Good question.
Thank you.
I've got just a selfish answer here. You know, I wouldn't. I could have chosen something here as a Triple Jump employee, you know, go and try and get some sort of important current events scoop about what's going on somewhere or with this game or that thing. But really, I would just want to get like the original Spyro team together and just talk to them about every aspect of the development, because I've seen them on like interviews, and there was like that video that I think you might have seen, actually, that a speedrunner ran through Spyro 3 with, I know Ted Price was there, I think Brian Hastings as well, and someone, anyway, like three of the devs were there, and they watched this speedrunner like break their game.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way through, they're like talking about things that they did, and like, oh yeah, I remember when, like, you know, who sat and came up with all that and stuff. So they seem to remember quite a lot about the development of those games, which is nice, because sometimes you, like, you watch interviews with either, like, game devs or perhaps, like, movie casts or directors or whatever, and you say, like, oh, how did you feel about this scene? And they'll go, like, oh, I don't really remember. What are you talking about? What happened? Okay. Yeah, I don't know. They seem to very much like remember a lot of stuff that they did, and more to the point, like things that were cut out. You know, I think that's what I'd really like to hear about. I know, like, there's some stuff that has survived in old screenshots of early builds, like the balloonist with the hot air balloon was replaced a boatman who looked like Asterix. And he had a big, like, horned helmet and a white, a yellow moustache. And he had a Viking sailboat that you would go around between the worlds riding that. So just things like that really interest me. I know there's supposed to be like a whole world that was cut out, maybe, possibly. So yeah, like Ted Price, Alex and Brian Hastings, I think they were brothers who worked on it. I think Mark Cerny was like sort of executive producer.
He's always around, isn't he?
He is, isn't he? That I like the idea that I would get an interview with Mark Cerny and just talk to him about the original Spyro games rather than like, you know, any of the work he's done since then.
Knack.
Yeah, Knack, exactly.
Knack 2.
PS4, PlayStation hardware.
PS5.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about Spyro 1. Did they really cut out the boatman? And Mark's like, I wasn't involved in the design process. Don't ask me.
I wasn't involved in the design process.
I don't know what you mean.
Spyro.
So that's what I'd do. I'd be selfish and just talk to them about a really old game, mm-hmm. Rather than do anything useful.
Well, I'd do the same.
Yeah.
I would talk to David Cage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to be rude or an ass. You know, it's not like I'm Ali G, you know, interviewing the Beckhams and just able to openly insult them and they'll just laugh because that's what he does, you know, and they know of him. I can't do that with David Cage. You know, he doesn't know me from anyone. So if
maybe dress as Ali G and
maybe.
Then you'll get away with it.
Yeah, so like, why is your game so crap? Yeah, if I did that, he would walk out. So I couldn't just say, wow, I think you're awful, but also amazing. I'm obsessed with your games. Mm. But I would genuinely like to just hear, you know, about what inspires him, maybe what his ambitions were for Beyond Two Souls, and if he'd do anything differently, because that's definitely by far his weakest game. Mm-hmm. But it's weak in a very unique and spectacular fashion in that it's the production values are insane.
Yeah.
Like, and he's got such huge actors in it. There's like, how and what were you doing? Like, how is it so good looking, but so weird at the same time and so divisive, you know? Are you proud of it? Like, what would you change? Like, I want to know. Because that man has been at the, and his team have been at the cutting edge of dramatic storytelling in games since they first started.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't kick it off. Games were dramatic before then, but certainly they've brought in a new angle that's completely, completely fresh. And I'd be interested to hear what he thought of Until Dawn and Supermassive Games' subsequent titles that are definitely inspired and build off what Quantic Dream has done before.
Absolutely.
I'd just be really interested to know like how he works. He's a little bit scandal pending as well,
right?
Or certainly his studio was. I don't know what the outcome of that was, so I won't speak on it or you know, speculate, but certainly there were reports that things weren't necessarily so great at Quantic Dream, but this was some time ago and I don't know how complicit he was, but certainly senior members of staff were. By all accounts, it seems that he's just a bit of a crazy man. And I kind of want to know how he works. I think that'd be really interesting.
I want to know if he played Man of Medan and thought, oh, this is great.
This is fantastic.
This is perfect. This is what I was going for.
there aren't enough super colliders in it, though.
Yeah.
That spill ghosts out from the other side.
Yeah. Why can't I fall over crates of chickens in this game?
Yeah, rubbish. Plenty of ghost hands, though.
It's pretty good.
But yeah, I'd talk to David.
Yeah. Wow, okay.
From one weird game to several weird things, are you ready, Peter, for what comes next?
Let me once and for all see if there's any paper in this room.
Okay.
Because we can't keep doing this.
It's impossible for us to keep doing this. Yeah.
There's got to be something. What's this?
He's gone. He's off looking for stuff. No, it doesn't sound promising. The mouse mat's fine.
No is the answer. No. I'll have to make a note for myself. Hello, I'm back. I've got a mouse mat.
You've got a mouse mat. I was going to say, use the mouse mat. How are you going to make a note for yourself with no paper?
Oh, I don't know. On my phone? Maybe I can use my phone to do a papery noise somehow.
Just smash it into the desk or download an app. There's an app for that, I believe, is the phrase.
Remind me, in 1 hour, bring paper upstairs. Okay, that's fine.
You
that's
good?
Done.
All right. Yep. It's time for weird news!
Weird news!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's weird news time. Time for some strange video game news. Peter, weird me.
Smash Bros. Patches out Minecraft Steve's meat. This is according to Polygon.com by Patricia Hernandez. Sorry, Patricia, for saying your name wrong. So that sounds like they're just being a bit funny. And really, all that's been patched out is, you know, some sort of meat-related aspect of the character, maybe an overpowered move or something like that. And they're just making it sound like it's something to do with Steve Wilson. Mm-hmm. However, that's not necessarily the case. So here we go. Yeah, this is Polygon. Minecraft Steve's introduction to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate was met with much fanfare, and it wasn't entirely because of his unprecedented inclusion into the party fighting game. Fans soon discovered that Steven's end-of-match win screen had him holding a piece of meat which, if paused at exactly the right moment, seemed like a not-safe-for-work pose. Well, now it's gone. Fans who have downloaded the recent Smash Bros. Patch discovered that Steve now eats the hunk of meat and then is left holding nothing when the camera zooms in.
Not even a bone.
No, sadly not. As you can see in this clip by Twitter user PlunYu. There's a little embedded tweet just showing the victory pose. And then in caps, the tweet-like caption is, "The Smash Bros. Ultimate 9.0.1 update removes Steve's victory meat, LMFAO."
Victory meat.
Victory meat. Let me send you the accompanying image in this article, which shows, I think, the offending single frame where it...
I mean, it doesn't... that's a stretch, isn't it?
It is a stretch. Well, hopefully it's not a stretch because it's pretty big to begin with, but...
It's a flex.
It's a flex. You really have to be looking for it, kind of thing, and willing it.
So it's not even from like a dodgy angle. You can clearly see he's fully clothed.
Yeah.
And he's holding Minecraft meat.
If he starts with it, you know, up in his hand and then just brings it down to his waist at the end.
Yeah.
Like, if it was just that from the beginning, that's slightly more dodgy. But even then, it's not really, is it?
I understand the connotations in that it's meat, and obviously Twitter probably had a field day and were just sort of laughing at it. No one, I guarantee, in fact I can't because the internet, it's highly unlikely that anyone would look at that and be seriously upset that their children could see it.
Mm.
You know, that's clearly just become a meme where like, oh, Steve's meat, he's holding it at crotch height. Hey!
Yeah.
And Nintendo is overcorrected in classic Nintendo fashion.
Well, it says here, Nintendo didn't just update Smash Bros. To tweak an animation, of course. Version 9.0.1, which is available for download now, has a variety of Steve-related bug fixes. Many of these changes are related to the blocky fighter's previously wonky minecart move. Curiously, however, the official patch notes make no mention of any changes related to Steve's meat. There's then another embedded tweet from @ArcanaLegacy, who puts, hashtag never forget Steve's meat, F in chat, and then in asterisks it says, in the arms of an angel. And then there is an Avenge the Fallen, like Avengers black and white close-up of the meat.
Wow.
Image that is embedded in the tweet there.
Incredible.
The final line of the... there it is. The final line of the article just says, yes, folks are sad, but all the attention that this silly detail garnered meant that Nintendo probably couldn't ignore it. Yes, they could. They could have done.
They probably could have ignored it.
But yeah. Never mind.
Probably could have quite easily ignored it, but there we go.
So there you go. That's that.
Wow, that's flipping weird, isn't it?
A bit flipping weird there, yeah.
Blimmin' heck. Blimey heck.
Hex.
Crikey.
Hit me back with the weirds.
Here's a push square. I tried Kotaku. Have you been on Kotaku?
No.
They've changed how their website works, and it's really, really difficult to navigate news now.
I noticed that a few weeks ago. I now have to Google Kotaku video game news and click on one of the little sublinks rather than the main. Yeah,
like they got rid of it.
Going on Kotaku and just trying to get to the gaming news is really weird. They've got like they just mix it in with the
other websites that are part of their network.
Yeah,
there's stuff from like Gizmodo and all sorts just in one long timeline. It's like, I don't want that. I just want, why can't I just see the Kotaku news, please?
Yeah,
it's a mess. So I went elsewhere. I've gone to Push Square.
Okay.
This was reported all over the place, but here we go. NBA 2K21 pledges unskippable ad error won't reoccur,
right,
is the headline. So I'll read the original story because they fixed it now, but here we go. If it's not EA, it's publisher 2K causing controversy by applying unskippable adverts to load screens after launch.
Mm-hmm.
PlayStation 4 title, and presumably Xbox One as well, NBA 2K21, now sports in-game ads before you hit the court as the game loads in the players, crowd, and arena. As reported by Stiviver, you'll see how the Oculus Quest 2 is advertised to PS4 users before they hop to dunk a two-pointer. A quick clip of an actor applying the headset appears before the $2.99 price flashes on screen. This was a problem players faced last year in NBA 2K20, and it appears to have come back once more in this year's iteration. Of course, the advert does not break up gameplay, and if anything, adds to the authenticity of 2K's aim of creating a real-life basketball match on your telly. However, nobody really enjoys being advertised to after purchasing a $70 game, do they? Who knows if this tactic will also carry over to the PlayStation 5 version, which costs even more if you opted for the version containing a free next-gen upgrade.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, unskippable ads. This has happened a few times now, it feels like. I swear I've spoken about this before.
Well, I have navigated to the hard-to-find news tab on Kotaku now, and lo and behold, Luke Plunkett, weird news editor at Triple Jump. That's not true. Has written that story. So, yeah.
Ah, see, there we go.
It definitely counts.
Yeah.
Not that there's any question whether it did. I'm just saying. Luke Plunkett wrote about it,
so it is weird. It's got to be. Update, 2K Sports has responded to the unskippable ads that appeared in NBA 2K21 over the weekend, explaining that they were part of an NBA 2K TV presentation, but weren't supposed to show during loading sequences. They tweeted, as many are aware, in recent years, ads have been integrated into 2K TV segments. Yesterday's 2K TV ad placement impacted our players' experience in a way we didn't intend, as these ads are not meant to run as part of the pre-game introduction. This will be fixed in future episodes. Thanks for your continued feedback. Which to me just sounds like, we're sorry.
Yeah.
We're sorry.
Whoops.
I'd know it probably wasn't intentional. Even so, get adverts out of games. I just don't understand it. It was exciting in Crazy Taxi when you saw fast food restaurants. I'm okay with that. Don't put blooming adverts like actual adverts in the games.
Not actual ads. Just, yeah, shove a massive Activision billboard in whatever open world city Activision have just released. Or, you know, you used to get that a lot where the devs, you know, you get like EA billboards on FIFA and stuff. Fine, do it if you like. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you want to do a few brand deals and have like a fast food restaurant or a, you know, some Monster Energy on the table, then go for it. But
bloody
God.
Monster, I would actually argue the Monster Energy was a bit much for me.
Yeah, but, it was a bit much for me. I'm almost being a bit facetious, but yeah, don't do actual adverts, please. Even if you're going to pretend that it's part of the watching basketball on TV experience. Fantastic, I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
you're going to make me pay a license fee now as well, or what?
Yeah. Know? Yeah, well, you've got to pay for the season updates and the battle pass as well.
Mm.
So, yeah. God, I hate games so much. Well, there we go. Too. That was the weird news. Let's move on to the next question.
From Stephen Scodes. Hello, Ben and Peter. With only a month away until the next-gen consoles launch, in what way do you think the current-gen consoles change the gaming industry and the way people play games? It's only a few weeks until the new consoles launch here in the US, and a week later for you guys in the UK. Very excited for the PS5. Keep up the amazing work, lads. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen. So I think a few weeks ago we talked about the how games have changed.
Yeah,
in this generation, you know, what sort of eras we've entered, bearing in mind that, you know, different console generations are synonymous with different evolutions in the gaming industry. But in generally speaking, what do you think this most recent generation of consoles has done to change how people play games rather than the games themselves?
I think, and this is only in personal experience, and I would need some proper actual statistics to prove it, but I wonder whether couch co-op and people going round to each other's houses to play games has reduced fairly significantly. Mm-hmm. You know, we're able now to play online, everyone to sit in their own living rooms and stuff. And even if you do actually go round to someone's house to play local and play on split screen, a lot of games don't even offer that. So it's not even a question of like, oh, well, I could stay at home and play online, but I could go over to yours and play on couch co-op. Or deathmatch split screen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't even actually have that option now. I think compared to how frequently you used to have that option, certainly in the kind of PS2 era and also PS3, Xbox 360 kind of era as well. So I think that is sadly that's something that I personally consider a negative. But I think there's other aspects too that are much better. I really like the idea now that it's so easy to share screenshots, video clips and stuff of things going on in your games. You know, there was once upon a time, if like a really weird glitch was happening, you would have to pull out your phone and start just filming your screen and then go, oh, look at this thing that happened the other day when you get to school the next day or something. I remember I had a video on my phone of on PS2 in Baldur's Gate, Dark Alliance 1 or 2, I'm not sure, where this enemy was just sort of spinning around me really quickly and it kind of looked a bit silly. And I got my he was like locked into doing this animation, so I was able to get my phone and start filming it to show my friends. Mm-hmm. And it was just, there were like scan lines because it was a CRT and it was really blurry and horrible and you couldn't tell what was going on. Whereas now, you just hit the share button and pop it straight on Twitter or save it in your library and show it to people when they come round or whatever. So I really like that whole aspect to it. And that is something that's obviously very much here to stay for upcoming generations. But beyond that, I was trying to think, like, to what extent has, you know, the current generation changed how we play? And I don't know. I'd like to hear your thoughts, whether you've got anything else. Because for me, it was mostly just the lack of people playing together in the same room, really.
Yeah. I think this generation has been sort of the end result where we find ourselves now. It's been a generation that has been one of convenience and impatience. We want games now. We want them better. We want them faster. We want them prettier. Too long, didn't read, saw the tweet, saw the headline, furious now. How could they do this to us? streaming games, preloading, frame rates, Digital Foundry performance comparisons that determine a console or game's value based on milliseconds of performance difference. It's all sort of been building to this point now where it's like, we're so impatient that the games just need to load immediately and they need to look incredible. And we will not settle for anything else. They need to load fast, look great, and run smoothly. And that's it. And if they don't, it's a huge inconvenience somehow. You know, I think this is just largely true for life in general.
Yeah,
really now.
It's the way the world is now, yeah.
It's convenience. We need it. We need it now. Like, I'm not gonna, very few people are gonna be asked to stand up and put a disc in anymore. It's you know, getting lower and lower. That amount. Fewer people are going to stand up and charge their controller if it runs out of battery. Some people might just switch the TV off. You know, it all seems to have been an age of impatience is what we've been building to in the last generation, I think. And you're right, there's lots of good stuff to have come out of it too. But especially as we go into this next generation and everyone's waiting on bated breath to see and I'm not disparaging Digital Foundry because they do very important and very useful work. But the fact that people put so much stock in milliseconds worth of performance or graphical fidelity or frame rates and stuff, unless there's, you know, a marketably horrible difference where one barely runs, it's such a minor thing, it feels like. You know, it feels like such a small thing to count as a victory.
Mm-hmm.
But people put so much stock in it now. And I think that's what the last generation did, was just make us hyper aware that as the strides between consoles in terms of how games look, you know, we say this every 5 years, it's like, you know, we didn't think games could look any better. And then look at us now. Look how far we've come. But really, things aren't changing that much. They're just getting smoother. And we can afford to put more hairs on the man's head, you know? There's not a huge amount of difference anymore. And as we've moved towards that, people are obsessing more and more with just the tiny, tiny, tiny details. They don't really affect games all that much. And that's what I think has happened with this last generation.
I love how both of us, I mean, I know I said, oh, it's good that you can share stuff now, but really, like, you know, you're saying we're really impatient and we demand convenience. And I'm saying, yeah, you know, it's really sad that, like, a really good feature of gaming has gone out the window in sort of this generation and, you know, the last generation to an extent.
Yeah.
Really... What a great generation it's been. No, it has. It has been. But
yeah, I think the loss of
broader strokes.
The loss of local co-op is a real sad point. And but, you know, the age of convenience isn't great, but, you know, it's better than it was. Yeah, I'd still say it's not necessarily a negative thing, especially as far as games are concerned. You know, just because it's been an age of, I'd say also the generation of entitlement as well, and people shouting loudly about what they want and abusing people when they don't get it. And that's always been a thing. But as with these new, you know, with these new tools that you talked about with the sharing and so on, and people's increased internet access and social media access and trolls and bots and all that kind of stuff, it really has been an age of anger and frustration. And hopefully we move away from that next generation, but certainly it has been one of convenience in making things faster.
I think it's easy to blur the line between, it is an age of convenience within gaming and beyond. And because there is also this age of entitlement, it's easy to just mash those things together and say, God, you know, why do you feel so entitled to things being more convenient to you? But they're not necessarily the same thing. Like, it's still a good thing that things are very convenient and easy to do now. Like, I always think, like, for example, my grandma, when I've been, like, at her house, or she's been round to our house, obviously not this year, but last year, I remember we were watching TV and an advert for Alexa came up on telly, and it showed a guy saying, Alexa, switch on the lights. And the lights came on. And she was just sitting on the sofa going, oh, God. Oh, good. the notion that someone couldn't be asked to get up off the sofa and turn on the lights, you know, that really, really frustrated her. But then she said, oh, mind you, you know, like, I guess for people, you know, perhaps people who have, like, limited mobility or whatever, you know, that's obviously a really good thing. Mm-hmm. So just because things are convenient and getting to the point where we can have something now and quick and good quality, that in itself is a good thing. It's just it's easy to mix that in with this mentality that, yeah, of entitlement and thinking that, like, I deserve a game that's 10 out of 10 and loads in half a second and
is and
the
get
best thing.
And I get a free upgrade to PS5. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. So there's a difference. So it's a good thing that things are more convenient, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. They just sadly, those two things tend to go hand in hand.
Yeah,
convenience, absolutely. You know, we've come so far and things are way easier now than they ever were. Yeah. And hopefully with the new load speeds and stuff, people will not really settle for any less. Loading times will probably get slower throughout the generation as the games get more complicated.
These load speeds better be what they're promising, by the way.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, this is all
so
they're
much
shouting
talk about these load speeds, yeah.
So hopefully they are. But yeah, that's what I would say. It's been a generation of convenience, increased convenience to the point where we won't settle for any less.
Yeah, you're right.
Right, it's time to move on to something rather large.
Rather large. Talking of convenience and not wanting to wait for things.
Yeah, and things that are lost now.
Yeah.
It's time for the big discussion. Big discussion time. Welcome to the big discussion. This big discussion comes courtesy of Samlot.
Samlot, I think you should read this one, shouldn't you? It's your turn.
Yeah, I will.
All right. I thought you sort of waited for me to read it.
No, I wanted you to respond to my really fun pronunciation, so I was just hanging on there.
Samlot. Samlot.
Perfect. I feel seen. I feel heard, and I feel valued.
The so Knights of Samlot.
Look, well, now you've just one-upped me, so now I don't feel so valued anymore.
Sorry.
Hey, Ben and or Peter. A big leap we're going to... Oh, I see, the question reader, I suppose. I was going to say, like, one of us might not be here for some reason. A big leap we're going to see in the next generation of games is a dramatic reduction in loading times, with some games doing away with loading screens altogether. This is generally hailed as a great step, and rightly so, but it does throw up some questions. Loading screens are a part of the language of video games and something we've come to expect. They often serve important functions, with developers utilizing this dead time to provide tips or information about the game's lore. In fact, the loading time was even artificially extended in order to give players enough time to read the on-screen tips in Ghost of Tsushima. That's true. It was loading too fast. How do you think next-gen games will address this disappearance of loading times? Are we about to see in-game tutorials get a lot longer and more tedious? Keep up the great work. These podcasts have been a godsend during these nasty C-virus times. Thank you, Samlot.
Thank you, Samlot. It's a good point, a good question. The first sentence where it was like, loading screens are part of the language of video games and something we've come to expect, I was like, well, yeah, but, you know, just because it's something that goes back a long time doesn't mean that it has to stick around. Like, we're not going to miss it. And then immediately I read the next sentence and it's like, you know, like, they provide tips or information, or sometimes they tell you, like, they actually have story information there, like, chapter 3, I made my way down to the docks to look what was going on in the warehouse. And then, like, it'll, you know, then the thing will resume.
That was the, like, vampire game, wasn't it? That we
it
played?
Sort of was. I don't know where that came from, but
and
it,
then
it was.
I watched
the
vampire a vampire float off the boat.
Yeah. And I thought, God, that's true, actually. Like, you know, quite a lot of games, not only do they have... I mean, I always think the little tips on loading screens are mostly there just to keep you entertained and have something to read. Like, I don't think it's ever super vital information in terms of control tips or anything like that. You probably already learned it in the game. But, you know, there's... Some games do still like to put narrative information in there, or they use the loading time just to sort of break it up, like maybe one day to the next. I think it's important to think about, like, how we are going to lose a certain place within the video game experience to put those tips or that narrative information. So I think, like, obviously the easiest remedy would to just have a kind of a splash screen come up that doesn't have a loading bar or the words loading on it. It just says press X to continue or press A to continue. That's the immediate solution. But, you know, you have to question, is it worth doing that and kind of breaking the flow of the game if you don't have to anymore? Whether tutorials are going to be extended and more bloated, I don't think that's the case. I think we've actually come a long way in making quote-unquote tutorial levels feel less like tutorial levels now. Normally, it's all quite well hidden in what feels like actual gameplay. You know, just say, press X to hop over this log, and you'll do that, but you're still playing the game and experiencing a level, and things are happening around you. It's not just you're in
Hello, I'm David Cage, and welcome to my video game. This is Bob.
You're not in some VR room where it's all wireframe and someone's saying, press the X button to jump over an obstacle.
Okay, Snake, I need you to press the cancel button.
Yeah.
X is that?
That was the best one, when it was from a multi-platform game and they didn't want to record. Yes.
Press the action button.
X what? Or A. Press the jump button to jump. Oh, okay, yeah, I'll do
that.
Oh,
yeah, the one with the man jumping on it.
Yeah. So I'd like to think that it won't affect tutorials themselves. But yeah, you know, there is loading screens do hold important information sometimes. And maybe some games will continue to have some sort of splash screen that comes up, but you'll just be able to instantly skip it. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's just going to, loading screens are just going to, I mean, again, you know, if they actually hold true to their promises, loading screens are just going to become a casualty of moving forwards with technology. These loading tips, they were never necessary for players. They were necessary for developers to keep, as you said, players entertained while it was loading.
Yeah.
It's just sort of evolved evolved symbiotically, where it was like, well, we need loading screens, so we might as well use this dead time to talk to the player. Now that it's not a problem for developers, if they need to provide tips, they're just going to have to find a new way to get them to people. And you're right, they could do that via just sort of a tutorial that's organically in the game. Like I think of the Outer Worlds very brief tutorial, which is perfect, which is you just running down a hill and there's a log you have to jump over.
Yeah.
There's a log you have to crouch under. And then there's a little bit of stealth to get past an enemy. Then you shoot a person and then they just let you go. Like, go do your thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Like, you don't need much more than that. There are still going to be times where you get a game over or you die. Right? And those screens can still provide tips and valuable information, and it can just be, and again, with loading screens, like, loading screens probably aren't going to disappear, they'll just be incredibly short.
Yeah.
And so what they can do is do that thing. I mean, and I'm not necessarily a fan of this because I keep being caught out. I kept being caught out by it, I think, by BioShock Infinite kept catching me out with it, where when it finishes loading, it says press X to continue.
Yeah.
In small letters in the corner. So you just sit there on your phone waiting for it to load, and you look up, so, oh, for God's sake. So they could do that on death screens or loading screens. It could still, you know, load almost instantly, but then you just have to press a button to manually leave that screen. But genuinely, I think, you know, not all games are going to need this. They can find other ways to communicate with the players. Bloodborne, for example, on launch. Bloodborne doesn't need loading screens at all. None of the Souls games really need loading screens. They're just there. And when Bloodborne launched, not only did it have very long load times, which were eventually patched, but it used to just say that it used to just have the game's logo on it. That was it.
Right.
They had to patch it to match the other Souls games in that it then had item descriptions up on the screen.
Hmm.
So it never told you useful story points, because obviously the story is very weird and non-existent practically, but it did at the very least show pictures of items with their descriptions and stuff, so it was sort of like lore that popped up. But that's a game that will not suffer from losing loading screens or load time, and I think a lot of games won't. And it'll just be a new, as we move into this new age, it'll just be a new problem for developers to solve, and we'll head off in a brand new direction in how they communicate with players.
Yeah, I think so too. We can only sit and wait to see how long or short these loading screens actually are. And of course, it's going to vary game to game as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe with, you know, games that were initially released on current gen, you know, maybe they'll have faster loading screens than the launch titles for PS5, because they might be, you know, bigger, more complicated games. I'd like to think so.
Yeah.
So it'll take time. Even you won't even know from launch necessarily exactly what the situation is. God, it suddenly got me. I've just realized it's got me very excited that Crash 4 might actually have a bearable reset time.
Yes,
now
that's true. You're getting a free upgrade with that.
I'm not sure what the situation is with Crash 4. Maybe.
I think you are. I'll just have I'll have a quick look. So we're Crash 4 next gen upgrade. Let's see. Okay. I don't know. It looks like it. There's lots of could be's.
Right. Yeah. I've not heard anything specific about it, but. I mean, even if it's backwards compatible, it might just load faster on the better hardware. So
yeah, well, at the very least, it's been listed for Xbox Series X. So
okay. They'll
probably sell it again.
Yeah, they may.
But
well
I don't
do
know
that.
If you'll get a. I don't know if you get an upgrade like that.
We'll see.
Well, there we go. We're getting so close now. Next gen, you can sniff it. Don't ask first though, because that's a bit. Don't overstep. Peter, if people wanted to get in touch with us, oh my goodness me, and let us know what they thought of the discussions this week, how and where can they do so?
Team Triple Jump, wherever's worth being, youtube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. That's where we put all our content out, videos and streams. When we stream on both of those channels, Lord Brotovich, Cecil Prumps, Mads Didactyl, and Trowling Badger are modding the chat. Thank you. Twitter and Facebook.com/Team Triple Jump are our social medias where you can get in contact with us. Luke Eldon's looking after Facebook. Thank you, Luke. We've got a Patreon, patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. There's not two forward slashes. That has all kinds of rewards. You can ask questions on this very podcast. Worst games ever, 2 days early, all kinds of other things. There's a Discord, bit.ly/Team Triple Jump, and that's modded by Jack and Joe. They're keeping it all civil in there. Thank you. The podcast is available in audio form if you're watching on YouTube. In all the good podcast places, or you can go to play.acast.com/s/triple jump. The website is triplej.mup, and triplej.mup/shop is where our shop is, with some exciting merch. Might be some new merch on the way in a few weeks and or months.
Oh, it looks cool.
It does look really cool. And finally, triplej.mup/VODs is a link to our YouTube VODs channel, where all of our VODs are uploaded. And not only that, but we get weekly highlight videos as well, and they're edited by Pat. Thank you, Pat.
Yes, thank you so much, Pat. We're on to our second week of those now. There's also a sort of a recap of everything that happened in Beyond Two Souls, because obviously we stopped streaming that back in, March-ish? So we streamed the I'm assuming the final episode this week. So if you want to catch up before jumping into the VOD, it's all on that VOD's channel. Thank you again to Pat for his hard work on that. If you'd like to follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter, you can do at that Peter Rostin, and myself just on Twitter at confused_dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, and sometimes they get demonetized for areolas. Streams every Monday, Thursday, and Friday. Thursday being the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube. Monday and Friday being solo streams on Twitch. Again, appropriately, I'm playing Fahrenheit, which does have Areola in it. So we'll see.
We'll see
what happens there. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. It's not a Worst Games Ever week. We did one of those last week. It was our Halloween episode. Go watch it. The podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows every other week. Please leave a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. Peter, this week, we've got Adam Pacitti doing a What It Means to Me on Habbo Hotel, and it is a wild episode.
It's such a good one. I love anything that Adam does where he just tells anecdotes about his Adam Pacitti life, and that is one of those videos, and it's wonderful.
It's peak cheaty.
It is,
So go watch that. It's really good, and James did a great job editing it. Obviously, there's not a great deal of footage floating around that isn't someone's character in Habbo Hotel. So James actually had to go into Habbo Hotel, pretend to be Adam Pacitti, and just just talk to people about wrestling and just generally be a bit of a nuisance. So yeah, you guys had something to watch while Adam was regaling you with stories. So it's good. It's worth a watch. Go do it. Let's see. We were also very excited to be a part of the Catch Protection League game jam that yeah, they've been running. We are judges on that, and I believe the winners will be announced next week. We will, of course, signal boost that on our social media. So big thanks to Catch Protection League for some reason asking us to be expert judges in a games competition.
Expert judges. We had to like fill out notes on like 9 different criteria. It was really, I felt important and clever.
Yeah, well, you should, because we both were.
Yeah.
So yes, we will. We'll probably talk about that again next week. But big thank you to Cats Protection for reaching out to us and asking again. We always love working with them, and they do very important stuff.
Yeah.
We actually have, Peter, 2 copies of Two Point Hospital and the brand new Culture Shock DLC to give away, courtesy of Sega.
Thank you, Sega.
Thank you so much, Sega. I was thinking about this. We probably should have discussed it before we started recording, but I was thinking maybe the best thing to do would be when this podcast goes live on Twitter, everybody who retweets it is entered, and then we'll just choose 2 people who retweet the tweet about this podcast, and you will win those codes. How does that sound? Does that sound simple enough?
It does, yeah. I mean, that's working under the assumption that everyone who retweets it does actually want to enter into the competition. Maybe they should also put a hashtag or something with it.
Oh, I don't know if we can see the quote tweets though. Oh no, I mean, we'll see the hashtags, won't we? I mean, if they don't want it,
I love how we're just making this up.
If they don't want it, presumably they can just say no thank you, right?
True, we'll do that. Yeah, so just retweet it.
Just retweet the tweet about this podcast if you want to win a copy. This is for PC, we should clarify. These are Steam keys for 2 Point Hospital and the brand new Culture Shock DLC, courtesy of Sega. Thank you very much, Sega. 2 keys. We have 2 keys to give away.
Comes with the base game. So
it do. Yeah. It do. So please do retweet the tweet about this podcast. And there you go. That'll be it. Another thing to mention, next week will be our Halloween episode. It releases on actual Halloween. So if you are a patron supporting us very kindly over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump for as little as $1 per month to get access to the podcast question post, then make sure you get your spooky gaming questions in. On the next request for questions.
What's the scariest game you've ever played?
Yeah. How many of those we're going to get?
Don't know.
And finally, this was something that was sort of unveiled last night. And you may have seen this going around on Twitter as well. Both Cultaholic Indeed. And Triple Jump are donating enough funds. I'm just reading the tweet here, to provide 1,000 meals to children in need in the wake of the UK government's decision to not continue providing free school meals, which is obviously very disappointing. So we wanted to step up and help out. And if you would also like to contribute and help feed people that really need it, especially school kids, essentially, who need school meals, then you can do so by going to fairshare.org.uk/active8. That's active and then the word 8, as in eat in the past
to have eaten.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
That is via the Fair Share UK sort of charity. So when we say children in need, we mean needy children, not BBC children in need.
No, children who rely on school meals and yes, will no longer have them. We've donated money to buy some of those meals for kids who really need them. And if you could also support them, that would be amazing. And we all need to come together in crappy times. And it's a shame that we are consistently let down by the people who should be looking out for them, for these people.
Yeah.
So, if you can donate, please do. Right. I believe we're all done.
Yes, I think that's it. Well, we're almost all done, but it leaves us just enough time in this arbitrarily long podcast, but there's always just enough time to go over our sponsor once again. Hey, you want that honey? When you go downstairs, when you get up at PlayStation 3 o'clock in the morning, go downstairs, walk through your PlayStation door into your PlayStation kitchen and have some PlayStation toast with the Sony PlayStation Hive honey.
Wow.
Fresh out the kitchen. Yum, yum.
Oh, look out. Your cat's done a PlayStation 2 on the floor.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm going to send it to PlayStation 7.
You're going to kill it?
I might. Yeah, well, you know me. Minecraft. I did it.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Yeah, you did. Yeah. You did murder a cat. So there we go. Well, thank you so much, everybody. We appreciate you listening. Please stay safe and healthy and happy out there. And we will see you again next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.